Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your outpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week, Drea Kaufman.
Hello.
Hello. You know what I really wish we had? You know how Fred and George created those candies that you would eat and you would have like a daydream, you know, like a good 30, 45 minute daydream? I'm like, I want some of those right now so bad.
I feel like this episode is being delivered with a little like dash of anxiety. either over the like allergy/sinus stuff, or COVID, which is happening as we record this, or like personal things that are happening for Matt and for me. So I feel like this is like, and then the chapter itself, like there's just a little dash of like anxiety to this whole episode. So hopefully we can talk it out and make everyone feel a little better, including ourselves. I don't know that we can make Harry or Dumbledore feel any better.
No, I don't think we can.
But we can try.
Yeah,
let's try.
It's going to be, I mean, well, the best part about this is, you know, we're at chapter 26. There's 30 chapters in the book. So we're getting to the very end of The Half-Blood Prince, which is so exciting. So before we dive in, of course, you know, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you're subscribed so you get the show as soon as it drops. You can also give us a star rating review on Apple Podcasts. And, you know, if you do that, we'll read that out on the show. We really appreciate other people, you know, you helping other people find the show through those reviews, which makes all the difference. And you can also find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. And then we've got thenerdparty.com, which over on the contact section, you can send Dre and I an email if you would like. We love getting emails from people about the show. So find us, like us, and follow us in all those places. Interact with us. We'd love it. You know, we get bored, too, sometimes during all this social distancing and stuff. So more Harry Potter conversation, I say.
Yeah, hear, hear. I did see someone posted on Instagram while we're talking about that before we move on too far, that one of those blank things that you fill in with your own information and post on your Insta story and all that. Yeah. Someone had one. There's a bunch floating around of like, which house would you rather be isolated or quarantined in? And one of them was a Harry Potter one.
Ooh.
And none of the options were good options. They were all awful. Like the worst. I would not want to be quarantined in any of those houses. Like one had Nagini, one had Umbridge. One had Lucius, one had Snape, one had Voldemort. I was like, these are all awful options. Like, I don't want to get stuck in any of these. So, yeah. And then the one that I would, like, consider, I don't remember who the bad guy in it was. It was a tamer bad guy, but the combination was Dobby and Harry. And I feel like that would just be hard to be around for a very long time.
Best thing about Dobby, though, is that, you know, he loves helping out with things.
And he could probably, I mean, we could probably conjure whatever we needed, but yeah, it's still, they were all pretty awful choices. I couldn't choose.
I've seen a few of those where I'm like, what was somebody thinking when they made this?
Yeah, you just made these a whole list of bad choices. And I know they're supposed to be. So before everyone writes in and tells me they're supposed to be bad, I get that they're supposed to be bad. But all of, you know, there weren't really lessening levels of bad. They were all kind of equally bad. So, but yeah, I'm sorry. It was my little Insta tangent here. But if you have a good Insta list about Harry Potter or something, like send it my way. I want to see it. I got nothing but work and Harry Potter and a 2.5-year-old on my hands right now, so I could really use the break.
Well, you know, this chapter kind of goes from bad to worse for Harry and Dumbledore, actually. So, you know, we're kind of like that. And what's so interesting is, you know, when they land there, they're kind of on this precipice that's just away from the rock face where they can kind of see. And Harry, I love Harry. He's like, wait. They brought kids here on a day trip, and I love how Dumbledore kind of fills in some gaps about how, you know, that this is between the town and the sea, and honestly, he thinks the only people who actually visited this area were Tom Riddle and these young victims. And what was really interesting is kind of getting filled in a little bit more, this idea that, you know, climbing down would have been much easier with magic. And so it makes me wonder, like, I think the book does such a better job of making you wonder about how powerful Voldemort was, or Tom was, even at that point, and the type of magic he was doing, even though he didn't have really any training at that moment. And so, just crazy. And I also really love, as they're standing there, you know, Dumbledore asks Harry if it's okay, if they, you know, he doesn't mind getting wet. And then I love the way that Rowling describes Dumbledore as he, you know, gets into the ocean and, like, does a perfect breaststroke, like a much younger man. And it just kind of surprises Harry. And so I love those little moments where she adds these little, just these little details that make all of the characters in the story come to life, and especially, you know, kind of making Dumbledore come to life in a way that we haven't really seen him before, which is to be, you know, very, I mean, here's a guy who one of his hands is all withered and gross, and, you know, he's definitely been looking older in this book. You know, that's been mentioned a few times of the his tiredness, you know, that just Dumbledore has felt more tired, I think, in this book. And then we have this moment where she just describes he basically just dives right in and starts swimming, and nope, it's as if he was, you know, 30 or 40 years younger.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see just kind of how she kind of depicts him as young and old at the same time. And it's interesting for Harry to sort of see Dumbledore outside of sort of the wizarding world as they've seen him before, right? Like, outside of kind of like the normal everyday life, because this is very much so not that, right? He hasn't really seen him in the midst of anything besides at school or the ministry. So I feel like this is kind of new for Harry, and he didn't really, I got this impression he didn't really expect it. Like, he kind of was caught off guard. Like, oh, this is a whole different relationship, interaction, a whole different setting. And he's kind of like, I don't really know what to think of this.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And it's so interesting because they get into this kind of like cave area, and, you know, this is like the antechamber, you know, is what Dumbledore calls it. And what was fascinating in this section was watching Dumbledore try and, you know, figure out exactly where the entrance is. And I thought what was so fascinating too is, and because Harry's never seen anything like this, but he's also realized when it comes to magic, things usually aren't just, you know, whiz, bang, pop, you know, it's much more subtle. And so I thought this whole chapter of Dumbledore trying to figure out what Voldemort has planned, you know, in this cave was really fascinating, because it gave us a whole kind of new side of magic that we really haven't seen before, as the kids have been learning magic and everything. And now we're kind of seeing, you know, obviously a master wizard at work trying to discover what another, but unfortunately evil wizard has planned and used magic for. And like, we learn about this idea, like, you know, that magic leaves traces and that kind of thing. So all of this to me is just really fascinating, because this is stuff that we just haven't really experienced before in the Harry Potter world up until now.
Yeah, it honestly, at this point, it felt forced to me. And maybe it's just the haste with which I read the chapter, but it didn't feel so much like, past chapters and past books, when Harry learns something more, there's someone there to kind of explain it to him. And that doesn't really seem to be the case here. It's just we've introduced this new form or this new type of magic that kind of feeds into what you're talking about earlier, just how truly advanced Voldemort was and is. But it just felt, I don't know, it felt weird. It didn't work for me to, like, have him just sort of feel around and be this super like, oh, it's here. And I don't know. It just, it didn't work for me. I didn't get a lot out of it. It just made it feel like pointless words on a page. I mean, it just made it hard for me to read. So like this chapter, I didn't truly appreciate the first part of it because I just didn't like this whole, like he had, like Dumbledore knew and just knew and did it. And it was just sort of natural and easy for him because I didn't feel like I got to come along on that. And I wasn't really in awe of it either. So it just kind of fell flat for me, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I don't have that experience at all. I felt like, because we're seeing it through Harry's eyes, and this isn't necessarily a teaching moment, it made sense that basically there's going to be a lot of this that we don't understand. But I liked actually the way that Dumbledore kind of explained it a little bit, where he said, you know, I taught Tom, and so I'm very familiar with, you know, like who he is and how his mind works in that way. And
if
obviously
we... If he'd said that several pages before or at the beginning or in the middle of what he was doing, I would have been much more on board. But it was like when he was done doing all of that, that he then said that. So like in the course of doing it, like naturally, maybe it made sense. But as the reader, I needed to get there quicker. So like I totally agree. When he said that, I was like, ah, okay. That helps fill in the gaps of like, how did Dumbledore know to do all this? But until then, I struggled to come along.
Well, and then I thought it was really interesting, too, when, you know, they find Dumbledore figures out the way to actually get in, which is, you know, there's the cost of blood. And I just really appreciated Dumbledore, too. Like, there's this moment where he says that he just sounds really disappointed and kind of disdainful of Voldemort, that he had basically fallen short of his expectations, like, and that he had basically been so crude. He expected more. And I just thought that was really fascinating to see, you know, Dumbledore once again be disappointed in who Tom Riddle became.
I did really like that part where he acknowledges like that he's still so close-minded as to think that physical pain is the worst thing that someone is the easiest way to weaken someone or the worst way to harm someone. Right. And I appreciate that part. I did like that. I think one of the elements of this book where Dumbledore uses his own blood to open this lock that we're talking about, I think the comment he makes about like your blood is much more valuable than mine, right? I think it's interesting, and I think come the following chapter, we're going to have a lot, I guess maybe chapters, we're going to have a lot more context for why that is. And it might even be further out. It might be the next book. But we're going to have more understanding about how much more valuable Harry is and why Dumbledore does not let Harry kind of step up to the plate and take one for the team, if you will, or take the bullet, right? Dumbledore definitely spends the rest of the chapter kind of taking the bullet for everyone else. But this is kind of the first place where we've indicated that, you know, that he steps up and is like, no, you're more valuable than I am. Let me do it.
Yeah, I liked that moment too, because I love that Harry, you know, he's like, oh, I'll do it, you know. And one of the things we're going to see here is Harry's kindness, right? Again, we come down to this thing of Harry just being so kind as a person and not wanting people to get hurt. Like, he's always the one who's willing to take on the hurt himself for others. And I really appreciate it. When Dumbledore actually tells him, you know, oh, you're very kind, Harry. You're like, you really get a sense that he really appreciates Harry offering. And again, this is the difference between Harry and Voldemort we're kind of seeing here. And I also, you know, I think what the, you know, I was thinking one of the things I like about this better than like the movie is like the movie just makes it look like Dumbledore knows exactly what to expect when they get there, and that doesn't make any sense. So I kind of liked this moment here again at this part of the chapter where Dumbledore's trying to figure things out because he doesn't know what to expect, because it's, you know, it's not like he's been here before, other than to know that this is where Tom had taken the kids long ago. it's not like he's tried to get in before. So this is a place again where the movie just makes much more sense, much less sense than the book does. But it's interesting too, because you know, once they get in there, you know, they see this big lake, and it's kind of dark enough in there, but there's this kind of like eerie green light coming from this island far away. And I love how, you know, Harry is like, can we maybe just summon it, you know? And Dumbledore's like, yeah, give it a shot. Sometimes that works, you know? So he tries to summon it, and something weird jumps out of the lake, which is super creepy. And I really like that, again, this is a place where Dumbledore encourages Harry by saying, you know, sometimes the simplest way is the easiest, you know? So always start kind of with that. So it's interesting to watch kind of Dumbledore continuing to try and nurture Harry in a learning moment when he can. And I thought that was really cool.
I did read some of Dumbledore's initial response to Harry's questioning of like, why don't we just Accio it, right? As sort of patronizing a little bit. But I think he sort of explained it like, no, that's good, because then we can figure out what we're dealing with, right? I did like that he sort of caveated it afterwards, like, no, that's not going to work, but it's still going to teach us something and show us something.
Right.
So there's still value in that. So I did like he sort of had that follow-up to that. And made it seem less like, oh, good job, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because, again, it's one of those things like, We get the feeling, obviously, that this is going to be something that they're going to be continuing to try to do with Horcruxes, and so kind of helping to teach Harry about the right way to search for these things and to kind of figure these things out is really important. And
well, and we'll come to learn in the future how much more important that becomes too, that Harry learn from Dumbledore.
Mm-hmm. Ah, absolutely. They have to find a way to cross the lake, and Dumbledore is able to find this chain, this like coppery green chain that he is able to make appear, because the magic, he says, you know, leaves a trace, and he, you know, mentions he knows his Tom style, and so it pulls a boat towards them. And they are able to ride this boat to the island. But what I thought was most interesting is Harry's like, do you really think it's like going to be able to hold both of us? And the explanation I thought was so interesting of Dumbledore saying that I don't think for Tom it's going to be about weight. It's going to be about magical power. And because you're not of age, Dumbledore would never have thought somebody underage could best him. And it just, I love how he, when he says that age is foolish and forgetful and underestimates youth, I thought was really fascinating, because I think Dumbledore's saying that just as much about himself and not just Voldemort here. I thought that was really fascinating.
I think it served. It's one of those things you like ration out loud, right? Like as you're working your way through a problem, you like come to a conclusion out loud and you say it and you're like, oh, that was a good thing for me to know and do too, right? Like you say something out loud and you're like, well, I do that all the time. Okay, good to know, right? So I think it's one of those instances where like he was kind of calling Voldemort out, and then as he says it, he's like, I should probably heed my own advice as well, right? But yeah, I do. I do think, though, it's different, because I think Voldemort completely sort of discounts younger people, and I think Dumbledore just counts them less, right? So it's not quite the same where they're completely discounted, but they're also not completely included. Yeah. So it's still kind of a form of, I guess, ageism, if you will, but it's still a little bit different, I think. I would actually be curious, because there's a part of me, too, that kind of wonders if he even really realizes he does that, or if for him the reason he's doing what we perceive as sort of withholding or discounting is not due to age, but because he knows, like we talked about on the last episode a little bit, mm-hmm. he sort of has a different opinion and a grandmaster plan, right? So, but yeah, I do like that he calls him out. And I do like anytime he says something that could potentially be upsetting or in sort of offensive to Harry, right? Like, oh, you're young. You're still 16. You don't count. He then follows up with an explanation behind that that makes it sort of, yes, it's offensive, but let me give you some context on it that makes it less offensive, right? You should be offended by Voldemort and not in general. So.
Yeah, I think that's something that we see here again, because as Dumbledore's saying it, you know, he's explaining why, you know, Voldemort should not do that. And obviously, too, I think Dumbledore's admitted to Harry, you know, you've handled much more than I thought you ever could, you know, from the beginning. So, you know, I think he's come to respect Harry in many ways, and we'll get to reason I believe that completely by the very end of the chapter. But I love that they get to, you know, this island, and there is a pensive like structure that has water in it that neither Harry or Dumbledore can put their hand in. And Dumbledore tries some other things to try and, you know, get into it magically, and he can't. So he assumes then that the only way that they can get the Horcrux is to drink this, whatever this potion is. And I love Harry's reaction and how he's like, are you kidding me? We're going to drink this potion? You know, like, because he's freaking out thinking, this is Voldemort. You can't just drink this potion. And I love how, you know, at first, Dumbledore seems to kind of be on his, like, oh, no, it's going to be fine thing. And then he's like, I'm sorry. What I should have said is that I don't think it's meant to kill somebody immediately. Like, it's going to be dangerous. I know that. I'm not discounting Voldemort. I'm just saying I think what he'd want is that it would keep somebody alive long enough for him to be able to figure out how they got in here in the first place. I really love that he, again, there's that moment where he, like, he expounds now on something that, you know, he sees Harry taking it one way, and he continues the thought, which is something we were getting at frustrated with him in the last chapter, but now he's seemingly starting to just answer questions much more fully than he has before.
Well, I thought it was interesting because he's sort of, it's like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? You're not worried about this. You know, it's Voldemort. He kills people, right? Like, this whole thing is super creepy and full of dead bodies and all this stuff. And he goes, oh, no, you're underestimating him by thinking he's just going to kill you. He's going to torture you and then kill you after torturing you right. with this device, right? Like, he's like, no, you're underestimating him and not realizing, like, he doesn't want to kill you. He wants to make you suffer and wish you were dead. So, you know, he kind of has this, like, it's almost like, oh, Harry, right? But again, you're, like you said, he just sort of explains it. Just like he sort of explains the Inferi in the lake, right? And
yeah.
He explains why they're not bothering them. And if they just leave them alone and don't touch the water, then they'll be fine. And, you know, but he does sort of allude to the fact that he thinks once they get this Horcrux that, you know, they probably won't be so peaceful. We might have to deal with them. So stay on your guard kind of message, right? So he does kind of the whole time where basically from landing on the rock outside the cave to the middle part of the cave when we start actually acquiring the Horcrux, he spends the entire time just explaining stuff to Harry. It's very expository. Let me tell you exactly what I'm doing all the time and while I'm doing it.
Yeah, I think what's fascinating too is, you know, we get to the point where he tells Harry, I'm going to drink the potion, and you're going to feed it to me. And he's reminding him that, you remember what the deal we made when I said you could come was that you had to keep obeying me no matter what. And this is another moment where Dumbledore says, you know, And the reason I'm going to do this is because I'm older, I'm cleverer, and I'm much less valuable. And we see again here Dumbledore giving Harry the encouragement and something very strange, which we haven't really seen before, but it's been huge in this chapter, is to say, you're the important one, I'm not the important one here. And I think that's really interesting because Harry and Dumbledore in some ways almost switch places in this chapter. And I think Harry, you know, by having to feed the potion continually and basically be lying to Dumbledore to get him to drink it, it's like they've finally switched places to where Harry's having to do the thing because it's the thing he knows that must be done for the greater good, even though he hates doing it. And now I think in some ways he might understand Dumbledore just a little bit more, into which, you know, Dumbledore did some things and didn't always tell the truth to Harry, but it's because he was doing it for what he believed to be the greater good. And I to me, that was really fascinating to kind of see them switch places a little bit.
So I agree. I didn't really read it as switching places, but now that you explain it that way, I can totally see what you're saying. I had the same thought process thinking about it a little differently. I more was just thinking about how they both do the same thing mm-hmm. all the time, but we've just yeah. really only seen Harry's perspective throughout the narrative, and this is kind of the first time we're seeing Dumbledore's perspective. Because throughout all the rest of the books, Harry talks about how important Dumbledore is, and he needs to stay, and he's the protector, and we need to trust him, and, you know, put our faith in him, and it's almost like idolizing him, and then now we're sort of seeing Dumbledore's perspective as the other, like he needs to protect Harry, and he needs to, you know, save him, and he needs to do what's best, and he'll take the bullet for Harry, you know what I mean? It's like
yep.
the same perspective from a different side, and we're just seeing that other side because we're in a situation where we're kind of, it's forced upon us, right? I do got to say about this section, though, I have zero understanding or any idea on why drinking it was the first thing that came to his mind. Like, I understand for the thought process in terms of, oh, it's going to torture him and things like that. But I cannot believe that he instantly went from I can't touch it to we need to drink it. Like, I do not think that way. And to me, it felt so far-fetched in the movie, in the book, the first time I read it, the last time I read it, the eighth time I read it, whatever. Like, that part to me, I'm just like, I don't know how we got from zero to I'm drinking a bowl full of random liquid, but that's where we are right now, people. So let's go. So that's the part to me that I've always felt like was a little shaky. And again, I get why we're drinking it, right? But for him to like kind of instantly go there was just, it was weird for me. It was weird.
But I mean, he doesn't really instantly go there because I mean, he tries a lot of other things to get it out, to which, you know, Harry doesn't even know exactly all that he's doing. But again,
I don't know. Like, I didn't really read it as he tried a lot of yeah. stuff. I read it as he tried to touch okay. it. And he kind of stared at it for a minute and then was like, oh, we got to drink it, guys. And that's definitely how it's portrayed in the movie, too. So,
but I also think that it makes a little bit more sense to me because he's already throughout this entire process at the cave, you know, he's already kind of pieced together how Voldemort was thinking when putting this together, you know, from the blood to like, you know, like, so you put it all together. It's like Dumbledore's so smart. This doesn't, it doesn't really bother me in any way.
Yeah. I think that's that piece alone though. Like, we talked a little bit about it already. Like, I get that he taught him and he kind of knows his ways, but at the same time, I don't know. It feels too omnipotent or too
omniscient.
Omniscient, thank you. It seems too omniscient for the circumstances. Like, there's so much that we've watched him learn from like a logic basis. And then this whole chapter, I feel like his understanding of what's happening kind of goes out the window from a logic standpoint. He just knows. Right. And that's the hard part for me in the whole chapter between the knowing where to go and the knowing where the rope or the chain for the boat was and knowing that he has to drink it. Like, all of it just seems too convenient and the explanation just doesn't really satisfy me enough to know that. But I mean, the way it plays out is great. It's just I don't know how it's like she rushed through the getting to that part because it doesn't feel like there's a long time or a lot of thought or anything like that. It seems very like, oh, very convenient, I guess. So that's the part. It ties back into that beginning part where he's just sort of feeling around and gets it and stuff like that. But it just doesn't sit as well to me that he just knew pretty quickly that he needed to drink it. But it obviously plays out pretty well in terms of what happens when he does drink it. And obviously that's what you do, right? You drink it. So he was right.
Well, and I thought it was really interesting because, you know, once they finally get to the bottom and, you know, Dumbledore kind of collapses and all he wants is water, and Harry is trying to get him water and he's trying to fill the goblet with, you know, the water spell, and it keeps working, but then it disappears. And so the only water they can get is the water that Dumbledore told Harry not to touch, which is the lake full of Inferi. And as he gets the water for Dumbledore, he finds himself, you know, being grasped and pulled towards the lake by the Inferius, which before he can do anything, you know, he's throwing spells at them. He's trying to get them to stop, you know, he's throwing them all the spells that he knows. And as he's about to be pulled into the water and, you know, of course, drowned, we get this fire erupting and Dumbledore is standing there, you know, who has conjured fire and has saved Harry. And it's an interesting moment because Dumbledore had mentioned earlier, you know, we didn't talk too much about the Inferi, but he had mentioned, you know, the way to scare them is through fire. And, you know, Harry forgot in this moment, which I really appreciated that Harry wasn't able to save the day totally all by himself, because, you know, I'd be kind of freaked out too and kind of forgot what Dumbledore said like 5 minutes ago if a bunch of like undead corpses were grabbing me and trying to drag me towards the water. And so I thought that this was really well done. And it's a beautiful moment too, because this is the one moment in this movie where I think they did a really great job. And it's Dumbledore whipping the fire around, because it is the exact picture from the British version of the book that was on the front cover of the book. So it's just really perfect. And
whenever I see this scene in the movie, or the picture you're talking about with the fire and everything, and him sort of standing up and commanding it, I always had this, it always felt like his Gandalf moment.
Kinda, yeah.
That's what it feels like, is his Gandalf the Grey moment, or the white, I'm sorry, where he just like stands up and it's like there's this presence and this authority. And I think that's also part of it too, is we don't always see Dumbledore in that light. He's sort of alluded to as being this all-powerful, strong wizard, but now we have him literally broken down. He's a broken man who can still stand up and cast that kind of amazing situation given the pressure and his physical state and all of that. So, and having the Horcrux or whatnot. So I just thought it was really interesting. But he has this like sort of Gandalfian moment. Is how I always think of it when I see that part. So,
well, and I like that you mentioned, you know, he's really in a bad way, because as, you know, Harry's, you know, telling him how sorry he is for forgetting, and he's like, you know, it's okay, it's quite understandable that, you know, you would forget. But Harry is really worried because of how faint Dumbledore's voice sounds, and he's able to get him outside the cave. Harry has cut himself, so he's able to open the door with his blood very quickly and get them out of the cave. And I thought this is the moment that was just really beautiful, because, you know, Harry's like, it's okay, I can apparate us back, I can get us there. And I love this last phrase from Dumbledore at the end of this chapter. He's like, I'm not worried, I'm with you. And it's just this, it's kind of an emotional moment. Like, you know, you read that and you kind of like well up with tears a little bit, because it's such a beautiful thing for Dumbledore to say. And it's the exact same thing that Harry said about Dumbledore when he left with Ron and Hermione. And he told them, he's like, I'm not worried, I'm with Dumbledore.
It goes back to what we were talking about a little while ago, in that it's both of them thinking and sort of experiencing this in the same way, but from alternate perspectives, right? So it's the exact same thing. And it just sort of rounds out that picture of them treating each other the same way, which is why sometimes it clashes, because them trying to protect each other they're going to butt heads. They can't do both. One protecting the other means they put themselves at risk, and that sort of always triggers conflict and tension. So it does round out that, really paints that picture nicely. Yeah. And it's interesting too, because we haven't really seen Harry this distraught over an individual person in a little while. It sort of happens in each book. We get one person who's he's horribly distraught over. And I sort of equated this one more so to his feelings for like Cedric and when Cedric's body, you know, he sort of like was very sorrowful and mourning over that. And then the same with when he found Ginny's body in the Chamber of Secrets, right? He's very much so protective and I'll take care of you. And there's just, he's got this like nurturing aspect to it that he'll fight his way out to take care of them. So I think that's just a very hairy like quality and something we sort of see weaved through from the very beginning, from the first book to the second book to now. There's sort of an instance of that in each book. And so it's touching, though, that this becomes, that moment becomes with Dumbledore instead of with sort of a peer or a colleague.
Yeah. Well, and it's just such a fascinating moment, you know, as we are stopping here, because the next chapter is chapter 27, the lightning struck tower. And, you know, things are about to go from bad to worse. And
it's like bad to worst.
Yeah, worst.
It's worst.
This will definitely be the worst that it's ever been. And so buckle up, folks. But before...
Bring your tissues.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Drea, you know, before we get there, if anybody wants to catch up with you, where can they find you?
Sure. If you want to share your Harry Potter Insta complete stories or... your ailments for sinus infections or what you're doing while you're staying at home. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's C-O-F-F-M-A-N.
And you can find me on Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero, Twitter, all under the name MattRushing02. I am here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars every week. Just a new topic in Star Wars universe. It's a lot of fun. You can find me doing two shows over on the Trek FM network. One is called The Orb. Do that with Chris Jones as we're talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. You can also find me doing the 602 Club, which is our general geek show. We're talking about all of the fandoms we love. And then last but not least, you can find us... you can find me doing cinema stories with my good friend Courtney as we're talking about films through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for checking your Owlpost.
Mischief Man.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.